Rhonda Miska is a bright light in the world of Catholic communications. With a background in community organizing and deep spiritual roots in the Dominican tradition, Rhonda currently works full-time as the communications director at the Church of St. Timothy in Blaine, Minnesota. She is also the founder of the Catholic Women Preaching Circle, a grassroots organization working to prepare Catholic women to be more effective sharers of the Word of God. Rhonda serves on the advisory board of Catholic Women Preach and is a regular contributor to U.S. Catholic. She is the author of the Synodal Preaching Guide. In addition to being a fine communicator, however, Rhonda is also a superb networker. Rhonda enjoys connecting people to other people she thinks they should know. And instead of only promoting her own work, Rhonda often promotes others' books and essays, trying to help good ideas garner wider audiences. Once upon a time, I had the good fortune of having Rhonda as a preaching student. Without a doubt, I now have more to learn from her than she ever had to learn from me.
So, Rhonda, I don't know, when you got my email and you heard me say, like, how does it feel to be a person of power? Some people are like, I don't think of myself that way. And other people are like, yeah, I do think of myself in that terms. When you got that first, like, what was your initial reaction to being identified as a person with power?
I guess I don't think so much about individuals with power as much as I think about groups with power. You know, I really kind of cut my teeth in my 20s with congregation-based community organizing. So I was part of the founding of IMPACT, the interfaith movement, promoting action by congregations together. And so I went through this training around, you know, and it really is sort of rooted in like Alinsky and, you know, and the idea of like, you know, you get power from organized money or organized people. I mean, so I don't think so much about individuals having power as groups having power. And certainly, you know, there's individual decision makers, but I think more about groups when I think about power.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you think about when in the language that you grew up using it in, or, you know, emerged when you started asking questions around power, how was power defined in that community?
Yeah, I feel like I've heard a lot about like the Spanish word poder, P-O-D-E-R, which is like the ability to do something.
Yeah.
Like if you were to say like in Spanish, like I can do that. It's like that verb. Or like to be able to do something. So it's the capacity to do something. It's very much about ability in the same way that like a leader is defined as someone with followers. Like a leader isn't necessarily someone in a particular role with like a positional significance. But, you know, if someone who sings in the choir can turn 10 people out to a meeting, that person is a leader because they have followers. So I think more about power is like the ability to get something done, as opposed to being in a particular role, right? Or having a title necessarily.
Yeah. So when you hear the word power, given that background, and then you hear the word influence, like how do you think of those similarly or different? Are they the same?
I honestly sort of have a negative sense of the word influence as like an old millennial, but like who spends a lot of time with college students. I think of like influencers on Instagram who are people that are like performing their life and promoting whatever, like, you know, green smoothie they're drinking or like fashion there, you know what I mean? So my first, like my knee jerk around the word influence is not a positive one.
I'm finding that as I'm interviewing people have really different reactions to these words and that they define them slightly differently.
Yeah.
So similar to like the work with truth, it's sort of power in itself is sort of like an umbrella term. And there's a lot of kind of these related words or synonymish, I don't know if that's a word, synonymish words to it that have different nuances to them. For example, I interviewed a person this morning who's a little bit older and I was like, do you see yourself as a person of power? He's like, absolutely not. Power in his imagination meant corruption and violence. And then I was like, how about a person of influence? And he's like, now, yeah, that I'm comfortable with because it means that I'm using words and I'm not involved in violence. And it was like, he was fine with the word influence, but didn't like power. And other people are quite comfortable with the word power, but don't like the word influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you think about it in the broadest sense of this word, the ability to get something done, what kinds of power would you say are the ones that you're able to draw on in your own life? because you do have a little bit of role power or authority, but there's a lot of other ways that, at least from a distance, I see you exercising agency, you know, power beyond just your role. So I don't know, would you just describe to me first, what do you see yourself doing right now? Like, what's your role? But then also beyond that, what are some areas in which you're exercising?
Sure. So like in a super nuts and bolts practical way, I'm the communications director in a large suburban parish. Mm-hmm. So I get to make decisions about, you know, what do we run in the bulletin? What do we put on the website? What runs on our social media? What kind of images do we use? What kind of language do we use? How are things framed around everything, really, right? And I see that as very beneficial. Do we talk about helping Africa, or do we talk about standing in solidarity through our commitment to a water project in, you know, South Sudan, right? Like, those are very, you know, very different things. And I think that's something I think a lot about. I mean, that's a power I have in terms of sort of shaping the public voice of the parish where I serve. So that's one like very concrete way of using power.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in sort of my like extracurricular life, I mean, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. So like networking is my life. I find a lot of joy in connecting people. And I think because of just different places I've lived and organizations I've been a part of and movements I've been a part of and the advent of Facebook, which is like, you know, a drug for people with my personality type, you know. But it's a great way to sort of say, wait, you know, okay, you just published a book and I think this person can review it, or, you know, you have energy around this. I really think you need to meet this person. There is sort of like relational currency. And I feel like I've cultivated a lot of relational currency.
Well, it fits in with your definition of power also as collective. I mean, you're doing a lot to build collective.
Right. I hope to. I intend to. And that's, you know, with Discerning Deacons, with the Catholic Women Preaching Circle, with sort of like my own very informal network of what I see as my, you know, sense discerning out of religious life is kind of who my peers are kind of midlife, mid-career women in professional Catholic ministry, seeking to use their gifts, you know, looking for community, looking for support, looking for ongoing formation. So just finding, you know, ways that we can connect with one another and journey with one another is something I have a lot of energy around.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like for example, creating the Catholic Women's Preacher Circle, that is not something like that you just sat around and waited for, you know, somebody to design. I mean, you took agency and you did it yourself and you used your relational power and continue to use it to find people.
Right. Yeah. And it certainly is tapping into any, because I've done very little promotion. Uh-huh. And like, I have to turn people away, you know, I have, because I really want to keep it at 8, every yeah. circle know as 8, so that there is, you know, because the size of a group really matters, as you know. And yeah, I have 2 emails to send today of women saying, thank you so much for your application. You know, I'll be in touch as we form other circles, but you know,
you're full.
We're full. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Everyone has accepted my acceptance.
One of the women who I interviewed last week, she was talking about a way in which she exercised power was she recognized that she had the power to convene.
Mm-hmm.
And she was drawing on that a little bit in light of, it was an interview that had been done about Queen Elizabeth on her funeral, that one of the ways that the queen exercises power is that when the queen calls you, you get together. And that mm-hmm. was a way that she could shape things that she cared about in the world, was by calling people together, and that people say yes when she invites. It's kind of interesting, because what you're describing there is also like this capacity of power to make things happen, because when you have enough relationality with people that when you call them, they respond back.
Mm-hmm. We've all learned to be pretty good at Zoom. So when I really got the idea for the preaching circle, it was like, wait, there's nothing stopping me. Like, I have the formation, I have the networks, I have the capacity to gather a small group and like create a space with like collective agreements and facilitate that. I don't need anyone to pay me to do this. There's no reason not to.
Yeah. What is it in your own background that you think has helped you to exercise your power and to do it in healthy ways?
Oh, I hope I do it in healthy ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say certainly my community organizing training, my time with Catholic workers. I also think of just like my experience of church in Cuzmapa, Nicaragua. So I was a Jesuit volunteer there from 02 to 04. And like maybe a priest would come every other week. Like, hey, it's the rainy season, so the road is washed out. So there's no mass because no one can get up the mountain. So, but there was just such a strong, and this is very common in a lot of Latin America, you know, delegados de la palabra, like delegates of the word, trained lay folks self-organizing, both around responding to like immediate needs in terms of hunger and food, as well as, you know, spiritual retreats. And so I think witnessing that, like a model of church that like, it can't be clerical because there's just not enough priests, you know? And in some cases you have these, women, you know, who have like a fourth grade education, but are just like spiritual giants. Okay. So here's a story that I maybe is about power, but it's just like, I don't know, for me, like a touchstone in my life. So where I lived was on the Honduran border. So it was where like the Contra War was very intense in the 80s. So Somoza was kicked out in 79. And then in the 80s, there was the Contra War, you know, backed by the US. And so people were coming in from Honduras. And so there was basically guerrilla warfare, like along the northern border. So like near where I was living. And I remember a woman in my town, very, very active in the church, you know, like did these retiros espirituales, like spiritual retreats in homes, and mom and grandma. And during the 80s, what would happen is like there was just forced conscription. So people would not send their kids to school because, you know, your 15-year-old son might just be taken from school and conscripted into the army. And that's that, right? And there's sort of no recourse. So this woman described like that's what happened to her son. He was forcibly conscripted. He came home in a coffin like a month later with a Sandinista flag over his coffin. And this woman with like a fourth grade education, who's like probably never traveled more than 20 miles from the town where she was born, and is stands like 5 feet tall, like pulls this Sandinista flag off the coffin and covers it with a white cloth, like a pall, and said, you know, my child is not a martyr for your revolution. My child, it was my son and the son of God. And like, you will not politicize his death, you know? And so I think about, here's a woman with very little privilege and very little influence, but certainly in my mind, acted prophetically and did what she did to change policy? No, but I think it shaped a narrative in a way that is really significant. And like, I think about that often, like, what does it mean to have that kind of faith?
Yeah. So, I mean, like the experiences that you had in some ways have put you in contact with your capacity to influence situations, to make changes. Are there things which you use as kind of like guardrails to yourself to make sure that you don't, abuse is too strong of a word, but like that you don't end up somehow squashing other people's power, or that you end up like, how do you keep yourself in check around the power that you hold?
Yeah, I think that's a really valuable question. You know, it's like, I know I can fill a room, right? Like, I know I have that ability. I know I can use words well. I know I can gauge people's emotions and craft a story and a message in a way that will elicit a response, right? Which is like what makes you a good preacher, but it's also what makes you a good snake oil salesman.
Exactly.
And so then there has to be like a lot of inner work around what's motivating me and what's in my Johari's window that I'm not seeing, and how much do I want to be liked and approved of? How much am I acting out my own? How much am I trying to convince other people they're loved by God because there's parts of me that don't feel loved? And I'd rather just focus on those parts out there rather than my own, right? Because so often, like whatever we're trying to put out into the world is what like we're somehow lacking in ourselves. Like if our core wound is abandonment, we try to help other people feel connected. If our core wound is et cetera, right? So I think that's where like the work of kind of ongoing spiritual formation and supervision in ministry, I feel like, is so key.
Right. Well, because, and I'll be honest with you, sometimes I've gotten feedback from others, like I think I'm doing something really, really helpful. Like people are quiet. And so I'll ask another question or I'll facilitate conversation or I'll bring things in. And somebody has said to me before, like, do you realize you're always presiding? I was like, okay, that's not how I'm thinking of the way that it's coming across, but that's interesting to find out that that's the way that it's coming across, you know, because I could fill space, like, you know, I could, and by use of words, help a group to come together. And it's in a, sometimes not always aware of the ways in which maybe other people feel like their voice is being squashed.
Right, which sort of gets back to like Dominic's definition of the holy preaching is community, right? Like it's not just liturgical or pulpit preaching. It's about cultivating community, right? And I think that's like a constant checking in with yourself.
One of the things Julia Diamond talks about in her book is she says that a healthy practice for people who are powerful is to always make sure that you belong to some community in which you're the novice. Or that you can't hold the power, or that you know, like what you're describing right now. It's like, because I can't hold that kind of power, it always keeps me in this position where now I have an experience of ongoing powerlessness in some ways that reminds me what it's like on the other side.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I remember hearing the story that Henry Nouwen, like in his his Daybreak community, large community, like he'd get all these invitations to talk all over the world. And he knew that he had like hit burnout, and that he was being motivated by the desire to be liked. And so he would sit down and discern with his community, like, which one of these do I say yes to? And what does it mean about my time away from the community? And what does it mean, say it about my own like need for rest and downtime?
And is there ways in which your Catholic tradition also resources you in those experiences of situations you can't control or you don't seem to be able to make something happen? Is there a saint you particularly connect with in that regard? Like a saint?
Yes.
Who meant something for you about power, powerlessness in that regard?
I think, well, Mary Magdalene, I connect with her as like kind of the proto-Dominican, you know, the first, the witness of the resurrection. And I think, you know, I really connect with her, the fact that she's like, I think the only, or at least one of very few women in the Gospels who's not named in relationship to someone else. You know, wife of, daughter of, mother-in-law, you know, like she's just Mary of Magdala, which you can say is either like the name of a city, even though that city they say wasn't extant at the time of her life. And so Migdal actually means tower. So then there's this other idea that Mary Magdala, like Mary the tower. So you have like Peter, Cephas, Peter the rock, and Mary the tower as sort of these followers of Jesus, which is a really interesting way to think about her role. But I think, so the fact that she's not identified with her family, right? She's identified in her relationship with Jesus, that she supported Jesus from her own means, and that she's the one out of whom seven demons was called out. So like this sense that there's a, I really sense that like her capacity to stay at the foot of the cross and to go to the tomb are related to the fact that like she experienced this tremendous suffering and deliverance.
Like she'd gone through her own dark space and could be there for somebody else.
Right. Like we can't be with others if we're not, you know, if we can't be with our own woundedness, right? And I just, you know, I guess I just see her as someone who like fully moved through whatever she needed to move through to follow Jesus so completely and then to stay with him to the very, very end and then to encounter him, to be the first one to encounter him and be called by him, called by name, right?
You know, one of the definitions of power is also, it was the capacity to influence others, but it also had to do with the incapacity to be influenced. like that you also, power is also that other people's acting doesn't impact you as greatly. And it's almost like what you're describing with Mary Magdalene is that like when you're standing with her, some of these other systems that are around you that might be hurtful or where you might be excluded, they don't have the capacity to hurt you in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this internal locus of control that like when we truly know who we are and we're fully standing in that in union with Christ, then like nothing else matters. Like that's who the martyrs are, right? Like they're just so fully themselves and in union with Christ that it's sort of like the capacity for someone outside of them to throw them off just isn't there, you know? And I don't know that anyone lives there all the time, but I think, you know, like we can try for moments of that, right? I think the other thing about power is in Christian spaces, this is speaking in generalities, there can be like a desire to avoid, to be like, no, 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 we're in the spiritual realm. We care about the city of God. We're not going to dirty our hands with like the systems of this world, right? Because our goal is to like get people to heaven. And what that ends up becoming is sort of just like, it's not using the actual power you have, right? So I think there's something to a willingness to sort of be in the mess of things, of how systems and structures of the actual world work. And try to be salt and light in that rather than like, okay, we're going to circle our wagons and be in our holy fortress. What does it look like to sort of be in the mess of it and to try to use power, knowing that it's going to be imperfect, knowing that there's never going to be a government or a country or a system that's like fully embodying God's reign because we're imperfect human beings. And yet like, there's, I think that Christians, and that's really the idea behind like embracing power in my community organizing training, is saying like, no, if you pretend you don't have power and therefore you don't use it, like that's not giving glory to God. Okay. That was my little PS that I wanted to be true to my community organizing formation, to bring up like, yeah, basically a willingness to dive into the mess and kind of get your hands dirty, even when it's not perfect, versus like, you know, trying to live in this idealized world and like, well, we're just not gonna, you know, not gonna go there.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, angarito.com. But let me also nudge you in the direction of Rhonda's website, where you can find links to her many writings, rhondamiskaop.com. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you this week as you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in this world.